2017, next year, it's going to be a huge year for women's sport in Australia. It ushers in the first season of the AFL Women's Football League. 8 teams playing in a national competition. It's huge. Now, that move, it's been called groundbreaking. But women's football goes back, way back. Organised women's football, it's been around in Australia for a long time. Now, if you had to guess just how long, what would you say? 20 years? 50 years? 75? How about more than 100 years? Yes, research has shown that women have been kicking the footy as far back as the late 1800s and had formed organised teams by the early part of the 20th century. It comes to light in a new book revealing all of this and more. It's called Play On, The Hidden History of Women's Australian Rules Football. A co-author of the book is Brunette Lencic, and she joins us this morning from Perth. Brunette, welcome.
Thanks very much, Jonathan, and thanks for inviting me onto your program.
A pleasure. The earliest recorded evidence of women playing footy.
Yeah, 1915, Perth, Western Australia. A lot of people are surprised to hear that it's not Melbourne, Victoria. Mm. But no, it was played here in Perth between two teams of shop girls. Well, it was a shop girls team versus a factory workers team for a department store called Foy and Gibson.
Well, that's a very organised event, and that must have drawn on a pretty well-established female football culture.
We're not actually sure how well established the culture was. What we do know was that department stores did have a lot of workplace teams. These were male teams. Mm. With the advent of the war, a lot of those men went off to war. And so there was a space available. And historians speculate that one of the reasons that women first started playing was so that able-bodied men might be shamed into enlisting for the war effort. Because if your women are running around a football field drawing big crowds, what are you doing?
That's a cunning plan.
It is. You know, there's Peter Burke, who did a lot of the early work on around that period, says, you know, he suggests that that's a very strong possibility. And Perth in those days was extremely patriotic. When we had the two referenda in the First World War, Western Australia voted in favour of conscription both times. You know, of course, your listeners would know that the referenda were defeated, but it wasn't for want of trying on the part of West Australians.
So women's football is an act of male shame. That's an intriguing concept. Of course, though, they're even mixed teams, were they not? In 1914, I think there's record of that, with men and women both playing.
Oh, they're even earlier than that, there were burlesque type games where people dressed up in costumes, and sometimes women took part, or sometimes, and it was more likely that men dressed up in women's costumes and played as nurses or mothers.
That's rather a different thing.
It's a different thing altogether, and it was generally classed under the category of muff football. So that was any kind of event where the rules weren't really followed, and it was mostly for novelty purposes, a bit like the Ted Whitten games these days.
But in the background, there is true, genuine organised women's football and an organised team formed. Where was that and when?
So the first teams were the ones in Perth. We can't underestimate the fact that women have always wanted to play football. Right back as far as the 1890s in Bendigo, a woman came up on charges of playing football in the street. Eventually the charges against her were dismissed because it was deemed that she only kicked the ball back to two miscreants who
charged
were playing.
For playing football in the street.
Yeah.
That seems grotesquely unfair.
And so the thing is, for anyone who loves sport, anyone who loves movement, anyone who loves to explore what their physical limits are, football's a great sport. And so women who were great supporters of Australian rules football right from its inception, it's not surprising that they also wanted to play it themselves.
So this first team, that the Foy and Gibson department store team, and there's a historic photo of that team. And they look,
isn't it fabulous? And there's something that not many people know. In the back row of the studio photo is a woman called Olive McKenna. She is actually the great-great-aunt of Guy McKenna, the champion
West Australian
Eagles backman.
Football legend, yes. You will find that photo in Play On, The Hidden History of Women's Australian Rules Football. It's a new book. Co-author is Brunette Lenkich, and she's joining us from Perth, where much of this happened. Who did that team play against, the Foy and Gibson girls?
So the Foy and Gibson girls eventually played against other teams, which were still workplace teams. So teams like Bonmarsh, Bones, the Economic Stores. So it became like a round robin competition. And the interesting thing was that it also spread to the goldfields, so to Kalgoorlie. And as far back as 1917, the Kalgoorlie women were playing under lights. I was talking to the historian for the WA Football Commission, and he thinks that that was probably about 50 years before men started playing under lights.
Wow.
And probably the reason for that was that the grounds were being used at other times, and so a night game, apart from being a bit of a spectacle and a novelty, was when the grounds were available.
This is an extraordinary thing. That, I mean, so much activity in Perth, and you've mentioned Bendigo too. I mean, what do we know about the early days in Victoria and perhaps in Adelaide too, the other sort of key football market in the country?
Women's football moved from west to east, and my co-author Rob Hess has done a lot of work on this, and it seems that the next state to start playing women's football was Adelaide. And then, interestingly, the next state was New South Wales, because it was in Broken Hill, which of course had historical links to Adelaide. And that was the next game. So this was Adelaide 1917, Broken Hill 1918. And then later in 1918, the first Victorian town to host women's football was actually Ballarat. And Ballarat happens to be my birthplace. So I was thrilled when I found that out.
Yes, indeed. Are the women playing the same game as the men, same rules?
Yes, apparently so. They played the same rules. They played with the same number of players, so sometimes 16, sometimes 18. That's what the men also did.
Yep.
But many newspaper reports suggest that the umpires allowed a lot more latitude in the women's game.
Oh, so it was vastly more violent. Is that what you're saying?
You've got to remember too, though, Jonathan, the women were playing in dresses at this point. In Perth, the dresses were silk and voluminous skirts that we hear blew up over their heads at times to show off their bloomers underneath. So, you know, it does sound really comical, but...
It sounds an extraordinary spectacle. But a real testament, though, as you point out, to that sense of wanting to be involved, wanting to do that physical thing.
And being competitive, because you can tell from some of the early photos just how much resolve there is. You know, there are photos of a player outrunning her opponents, and she looks just as, you know, every bit as competitive as some of these marquee players who have been recently announced who are going to be playing in the National League next year.
Yes, an amazing moment that is. But as you point out, going back to that anecdote from Bendigo of the woman arrested for kicking the ball, clearly this was not necessarily the rise of women's football was not necessarily a thing welcomed universally.
I guess during the war, it was aligned so much to the patriotic effort. You know, some of the matches were fundraisers directly for the war effort, and that happened in both world wars. And that's when the crowds came out. It was also a morale booster. At the time, it was, you know, at a time of privation, it was something new and different and fun. So certainly the war periods, the First and Second World Wars, were when women's football was really encouraged. It didn't stop after that, but public interest in it started to wane in the early 1920s, and then there'd be occasional matches that would spring up that would excite the public. People would also be interested to know, I think, that Tasmania in the first 40 years after 1915, women's football was played in more than 20 towns in Tasmania in that period, particularly in northern Tasmania. So it was a sport that really took off.
An extraordinary thing. I mean, it says a lot about, I suspect, that, you know, the gender bias in the way we look at sport, that so much of women's sport, and here we're talking about women's football, is just overlooked. It's there, it's vigorous, it's well supported, and yet ignored.
It's interesting you say that, Jonathan, because it brings to mind a quote from Simon Barnes writing for The Times a couple of years ago. And he said, some days you can open a newspaper and think that women have never played sport in the history of civilization.
Mm-hmm. And yet that's so not the case, as you've discovered.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've got to say, it was really exciting for me. You know, my background's journalism, and I have an innate curiosity that I've never outgrown. And when I started discovering just how much information was out there, I felt like an archaeologist. You know, I wasn't Carter and Tutankhamun's tomb, but I was so excited the day I first found a page of newspaper photos from 1921 from a women's football match. So it showed action shots, it showed some casual player photos, it showed the players having oranges and lemons at quarter time breaks.
And
it was just wonderful.
Like other sporting clubs, they keep good records. I mean, this is a thing that we have in male sport, is this long line of statistics and so forth. Is that true of the women's game?
Oh, no. The women, you know, tended to support men's football for a long, long time. Mm. They were also often the stats keepers, you know, the washers of the Guernseys and so forth. When it came to women's football, the players themselves had to do everything. And so lots of things didn't happen. By painstakingly piecing together newspaper articles, you can find player lists. Sometimes mascots were included, goal kickers and best players. But many of them simply record that a game was played and it might talk about the result.
Well, all the more important, Brunette, that you've brought so much of this history back to life. That's, you know, giving it at this important moment for women's football a real sense of its past.
Yeah, and the sense that these women today who will be enjoying wonderful facilities and high-level coaching and so forth, they are links, very significant links, I've got to say, but links in a very, very long chain. Brilliant. And I just love the idea that female footballers will be able to claim their own heritage and not have to borrow exclusively from the men's game.
Indeed, an important thing. Brunette, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Oh, you're very welcome, Jonathan. Thanks for your interest.
Brunette Lenkech is co-author of this new book, Play On, The Hidden History of Women's Australian Rules Football. And it's a history that is a lot longer than you think. Sunday Extra here on RN.